This is Lorna Grenz, Assistant Dean of Women. Welcome to A Feminist Perspective. This weekly radio broadcast is sponsored by the Women's Resource and Career Planning Center, a program and information service of the Dean of Women's Office, 220 Strong Hall. A Feminist Perspective provides a forum for discussion of issues that concern women. Some very significant changes are occurring which affect the lives of both men and women and deserve our special attention. The Women's Resource and Career Planning Center contains large amounts of information, news clippings, government documents, magazine articles, and research studies, books which pertain to the many aspects of the women's movement. We invite you to come in and browse or take advantage of the materials that can be borrowed. That's in 220 Strong Hall at the University of Kansas. In previous programs, we have discussed the many influences that propel women toward motherhood, almost automatically in this culture. We have pointed out that motherhood is not an appropriate or desirable choice for all women or all men, and very serious consideration should be given before a couple decides to have a child. Although no contraceptive method is 100% protective, women can exercise much greater control over reproduction today. It seems self-evident that a wanted child would be healthier and happier than an unwanted child, and that a man or woman who wanted to be a parent would be healthier and happier, and better able to cope with the frustrations that might occur. Tonight we are going to discuss motherhood abuses. We would like to define abuse, discuss its causes, some of its results, and the legal implications that exist. With me this evening are Professor Sterling, lecturer in Social Welfare Department at the University of Kansas, Ruth Ann Bean, probation officer from the Douglas County Juvenile Court, Dean Ann Bullock, protective social worker from the Lawrence District Office, and Louise Cook from the Lawrence School System. She is a social worker there. I would like to begin by discussing what abuse is, what kinds of definitions there might be, what is considered to be abuse of children.
There are probably broad and narrower definitions of abuse. I think in the legal sense, the law provides for a wide description of abuse, including physical, mental, emotional kinds of abuse. But when a case gets to the courtroom, the definition becomes somewhat narrower, especially if the effort is being made to remove a child from his parents. When you're talking in the broader sense, I think any kind of deprivation that a child suffers, all the way from love to physical needs, to the proper kind of environment, can be included in abuse.
Yeah, and I did a little reading in preparing for this this program, and I was interested to find that in the definition of abuse, apparently emotional abuse or neglect is really not defined in the abuse and child protective legislation in any of the states except Minnesota. That just recently, apparently, Minnesota has included in its description, in its definition of abuse, a consideration that the emotional life of a child is important.
Yet, in our state, we use a form under the mental part when reporting abuse. It includes such thing as aiding and abetting by exposure to chaotic or immoral surroundings, bizarre or unstable behavior, being exploited for purposes of exhibition, threats, and I think this kind of thing certainly must be considered emotional abuse.
But the fact that it's not written into the law must have some implications, at least as you are trying to cope with those particular situations, or is that not true?
Well, I think only the word emotional is not included in the law. It does specifically include mental abuse,
I
think this would include emotional abuse too.
I'd like to point out that I think very often some things occur that are not technically abuse, but probably are abusive. It always is frustrating to me personally to read of women who have been taking fertility pills to the extent that they do have a large number of births at the same time, and when the children are not healthy, it seems to me as though that could fall into the category of abuse also. Somehow inhuman to me, I guess. That's a value that I would have in defining abuse.
I think speaking legally, it would be almost impossible to prove that as abuse.
I'm sure
I think
it would
be. Just really a judgment on the part of the people. Uh-huh. And
it's
I have
an
read
attitude.
Nothing where the mothers really felt that they had been abused or that the children will be because of the large numbers.
Uh-huh.
Children at
birth. It's not so much a matter of the large numbers as it is that they are so often unhealthy that concerns me. And of course, many of them don't survive, which may be protective.
On the other hand, I'm sure there have been and still are many mothers who have large numbers of children who are sorry the next time they become pregnant. And this happens to them primarily because they either don't know how to prevent pregnancy or for some kinds of religious reasons.
Yes.
Well, I have trouble with the looking at child protective services or the notion of child abuse and neglect in those kinds of terms. For example, I think for as many people as there are who would prefer to have smaller families, there are probably just as many who, by choice, would mm-hmm. want to have large families.
Mm-hmm.
And where the neglect is not necessarily from them, in the sense of not caring for the children, but really not having the resources.
Mm-hmm.
And in much of my own experience, I have a much greater sense that the neglect is much less from the parents than it is from the community, in the sense of not having the kinds of services available for people who would want, by choice, to have more children,
mm-hmm.
and who are perfectly competent and capable of raising a healthy child, but don't have a health facility available, don't have child care facilities available if both parents need to work, for example. And there's hardly any family these days who can afford not to have both
mm-hmm.
parents working.
Mm-hmm.
Children who live in with parents who may have a health problem, but not so serious that they need to be in hospital, but where homemaker service and visiting nurse service and so on are necessary. The neglect there occurs not out of the parents' disenchantment with being parents, but really, you know, want to have the children and want to do the best they can and can't because they don't have the supportive services that are necessary from the community. Who's neglecting the child then?
Yes, that's really a good point, I think. And of course, I think throughout this series of programs, our whole emphasis has been toward people's choice and making those choices and the conscious making of choices. So it's not, I don't mean to imply that large families are inherently bad. I agree entirely with what you're saying. In some of the reading that I've done, it was pointed out that if parents even had a place where they could temporarily leave a child, even just for a couple of hours, where they could have some time by themselves together or by themselves, that would in itself reduce the amount of physical abuse that there might be to the children. And in some communities, those kinds of drop-off nurseries, I think they're called, or something similar to that, are being initiated to prevent that kind of tension that must arise in a parent and give them some alternatives to release that without abusing the children. I don't know if you have anything to add regarding that.
Well, you were talking about the choice that people make, and one of the things I see in my work with school-age children and with young unwed mothers, both, who are thinking of becoming parents or who are actually on the way or have become parents, many times they're not sorry until later. Given the right to make a decision and having the knowledge with which to do that, they still sometimes change their mind when the reality becomes very, very real to them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes babies are very appealing. The thought of having something of one's very own is very strong. And yet when the time comes that the baby cries all night and you have to have money to feed the baby and you can't go away and leave the baby, all of these things become real. It becomes much more difficult. And I think what I'm saying is I think partly the schools have been at fault for not providing enough education for parenthood. But even if we did a better job, I'm not certain that people take the long-range view
seriously
enough.
Mm-hmm. I attended a meeting in Topeka a few weeks ago where several social workers were, and they said that in Topeka they've had this happen as much as 17 and 18-year-old girls who kept their children, their babies, really wanted to and wanted the child even though they weren't married. Their friends now are saying, if this ever happens to me, I won't keep mine, because they see how much trouble they are and the crying and the mm-hmm. how just really much of a problem is that they decide they don't want to, if and when it ever happens to them, even though they had originally thought, well, it's great, you know, keep the baby and really want it.
Well, there are so many things that influence girls as they're growing up, and even adults. The common ads on television show the woman, you know, in her trim pantsuit with her hair in a coiffure, waxing the floor, for heaven's sake.
Right.
You know, all of the non-realities that we have all around us certainly don't help to clarify what the reality will be in the long run, or the short run either, I guess. So people are fairly well programmed toward a very idealistic kind mm-hmm. of image.
Of course, the best way to be a good parent is to have had good parents. And unfortunately, many of the people who are going to be parents don't fall in that category. Mm-hmm. And I think, as Professor Sterling said, even apart from the school, we need much more available public education about parenting, either through departments of social welfare or school systems, adult education,
Mental health
clinic is doing some of this already in our community, but I'm not sure it's reaching the people who need it the most.
No, it's true.
Well, are there any kinds of programs in the offing that will provide these things that we have pointed out are necessary public service programs, or can we anticipate that we will continue in about the same way that we have been?
I think there has been a change. We mentioned that the Burt Nash Community Mental Health Center is offering, both here and in Baldwin, programs directed toward being better parents.
I think if there was a little more publicity about them, I know a lot of people don't realize that they're having them.
Mm-hmm.
If there could be more way to inform more people about them and when they are, and the fact that they are free, that they don't have to pay for.
How would somebody contact that service if they were listening this evening and were interested?
They could call the Burt Nash Community Mental Health Center, which is listed in the yellow pages under county government, or in the regular white pages under Burt Nash.
Are there any other helps that people might find?
Unfortunately, I can't think of the agency, but there is an agency that is helping women learn more about health care for their children, helping them with menu planning and things like this, especially for lower income that are in welfare and cannot buy the food that is really necessary anymore. They're helping them find alternatives, you know, for better nutrition for their children.
Douglas County Extension, the nutrition service under Olitha Blevins,
right,
and they have a new person, a Mrs. Simpson. They're starting even teaching kids in the sixth grade
right.
how to buy groceries economically, how to prepare food well. and going into many homes and teaching mothers how to market, how to organize their kitchen, get the most from their food dollar.
I think that's really important because, like you pointed out earlier, that so many people don't realize that they made a wrong decision until it is too late. The children are 6 or 7, and all the pressures that they're facing now just completely build up and overwhelm them. Mm-hmm. And like Stan said, there is not enough available in the community to help them relieve these pressures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing that always troubles me is the notion that they made a mistake.
Right.
And, you know, if... what strikes me in the history of neglect and abuse, they've discovered in the research that the notion of the willfully neglectful and abusive parent is really has been disproven, and the as they've tried to give service to abusive or neglectful parents, they found that there is no such thing as the unmotivated parent either, provided the help is available and given in a way that people can use it.
I think that's very true, because I know the courts previously had the stand where any abused child had to be removed from the parents. There was no hope for them working with them.
They discovered that too.
Right, and there's a new trend now.
That's right. Not to remove the child from the home. It has to be under very drastic circumstances now.
And we have found that the parents can be worked with and are extremely motivated. Many of them don't realize that, you know, especially physical abuse, many of them grew up being abused the same way, and they just didn't know any other way to deal with their children, and that was their only means of discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it strikes me that the women's lib thing, you know, on the business of engaging in a dialogue about whether women should have children, you know, I suspect that we're being distracted in that dialogue from what may be a much more important problem, that I suspect that many women, that there are many more women who have decided not to have children based on the sense of wanting to be free and having the right to be free and decide for themselves, you know, what to achieve in professions and so on, would still like to have children. And aren't, not because of the freedom issue, but because of the problems inherent in raising a child. And that we really haven't attended to the, I'd love to see the women's lib, that powerful group of people now, you know, to begin to pay some attention and give some energy to the development of community resources, the lack of which represents deep community neglect of children, rather than parental neglect. The need for the child care. Now, I know the women's lib groups have been pushing that all over, and that's very important.
So.
But that's not all. The health services, and the homemaker services, and the visiting nurses, and the
housing authorities.
Housing, but all these services represent for parents, whether they have had children by choice or not. Mm-hmm. You know, their problem. You know, I guess what I'm responding to is the notion that they made a mistake. You know, that much more often I suspect it was a mistake not in terms of the person, but it was a mistake because they find that they really don't have the resources necessary, and there's no way they can anticipate all of the needs that children have, or that parents have, in order to raise children.
That's very true. I've yet to find, in my experiences for over 3 years, a parent that does not love their child. You know, I think if it was truly a mistake, they would not have that love anymore for their child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do we have any more?
I do think, though, as a result of the kind of movement you're speaking of, that there are some young people now who are planning to make a deliberate choice to take adoptive children instead of having their own children, simply because of their great concern about
the population
explosion and ecological things.
Well, and I think for some of them, also, an older child fits better into their career plan than an infant. You know, where there's a total dependence, and those choices, I think, certainly are viable for people too.
But the choice of an infant is precluded by the fact that the resources for taking care of the child aren't here. Mm-hmm. And the assumption that each parent has to be responsible for his own rather than the community being responsible for its children, mm-hmm. I suspect is a much more important problem.
So in your opinions, it's not even a matter of people being unable to find social support for relinquishing a child if they do feel unable to help that child grow. That is not what they even would desire to do.
No. Even in some of the most serious abuse cases. Well, which they're discovering now, that separating the child from the family is not the solution. Mm-hmm. It does much more harm.
I think Louise could speak to that many children that we see, even though they have bruises all over them, they do not want to be removed. They don't want anything done because they do have this very strong attachment to their parents, and the parents cannot be totally mm-hmm. neglecting the child. You know, they are giving them the emotional... You know,
the separation itself is almost as traumatic as the abuse they have suffered.
Right.
And there are some instances where I agree that a temporary separation, mm-hmm. right. while the family is being worked with, is really necessary for the protection and well-being of everybody concerned.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But more and more, it is possible to leave the child in the home while this is being accomplished.
And we're going away from the idea that they have to be separated permanently.
That's
one of the most
uh-huh.
important things.
I've been into several cases where the mother has children now and has previously had her children removed when it was the big thing to permanently remove children. And if you take the time to work with them, or if it's necessary, temporary removal, it's very easy to work with her if you take the time and the patience and help her with the resources that are available.
Uh-huh.
And it's not necessary to remove these children, and probably wasn't necessary to have removed the original, the first ones where when it was then at the time, but it was the customary thing at the time.
There's some instances that I think of where there has been mental and emotional abuse for a long period of time, and everybody around is kind of aware of it, but it's very difficult to prove, to pinpoint, to be very specific about. And finally, a child will come to school bruised and with some big black and blue marks on him, or belt lashes, one thing or another. And you're almost glad when this occurs.
Right.
Because it gives you then an opportunity to get your foot in the door to really help the family.
Just the straight emotional neglect is almost impossible to prove, especially when you get in the courtroom. There's just, you don't have a chance.
That's one of the best things about the new change in the law, I think, was the provision for juvenile protective services, mm-hmm. because even there, in the case of emotional or mental abuse, very often you're already acquainted with the family or the school mm-hmm. is, and you can go in and try to work with the family, not necessarily on the grounds of abuse, but for other related causes.
If we were able to instate some of these educational programs and some of the daycare facilities and so forth that Professor Sterling was suggesting, then do you see that would relieve this emotional abuse or psychological abuse problem also?
I think it would certainly help it along. It wouldn't in all cases, but a lot of it wouldn't.
It would reduce some of the frustration that families
right.
suffer that leads to abuse so right. often. Just
well, I have it in my own notes, something I was reading just last night. That 50% of the children in public foster care who have been placed because of neglect I'm sorry 50% of the children in foster care were placed because of neglect
mm-hmm.
and the other study is demonstrating that the neglect has much more to do with the absence of resources
mm-hmm.
and there's a tremendous amount of money used in public welfare for public foster care,
right.
where that money could be very well used for the facilities, for other services
mm-hmm.
that could be done with the child remaining in the home and continued work by staff, or professionals in the range of services being offered to parents who appear to be neglecting their children.
So, Excuse me. Go ahead.
Well, related to what you were saying, is the fact that not all abuse is committed by parents, which we have sort of assumed while we're sitting here.
Yes.
And if we had better, more adequate daycare services, there wouldn't be the abuse caused by babysitters that often happens. Many times the care is inadequate, not only from a physical standpoint, but from the mental and emotional standpoint. And sometimes it's quite severe, even leading to sexual abuse, things of this type, and the parent may be actually ignorant of what's going on.
So is there a consensus that even perhaps diverting some of the funds to different uses that are now available would help greatly toward this problem? It's not necessarily a need for more funds as much as it is...
Redistribution.
Yeah. I think even...
And more.
Yes.
I think even the idea that the amount paid for foster care, okay, is an agreeable amount, but the amount of regular public assistance grants that welfare clients receive, the addition of a child in the family from 2 to 3, the difference of $47. If that same child is placed in foster care, depending upon the age, the foster parents will receive anywhere from 2 to 4 times that amount of money. If they were more equalized, in other words, the grants more equal to the amount that's paid for foster care, the parents would have more opportunity
to do a good job
or to perhaps use the resources that you do have to pay for, you know, on a nominal fee, that they can't just stretch $122 or $169 to cover.
We're coming close to the end of our time, but I would like to ask if any of you know anything further about such organizations as Mothers Anonymous or the Crisis Nurseries that we really are suggesting would go a long ways toward solving these problems without disrupting the family unit.
I had a parent who had abused one of her children. And when she was in Kansas City, she had been affiliated with an organization there. I don't know that the name was Mothers Anonymous, but it was a group of parents who had all had this in common, that they had abused their children. And they did have professional counseling on a group basis.
Yes.
And she found it very helpful and was doing a very good job of being a mother when I came to know her after she moved here.
Yeah, the KU Medical Center, they have a child abuse team that does... quite a bit of work like this, but I don't know of any ongoing groups other than the mental health clinics that really are an organization here in Lawrence that mothers can contact.
It's pretty much kept anonymous here.
Right.
Well, I think then that we have agreed that there is a strong need for the community to be involved with families in order that appropriate care can be provided for children. And to relieve the parents of that responsibility that they now assume almost totally. I would hope that those of you who are listening that have interest in this area might assist us in providing some of these resources. I don't know exactly how we might go about it, but perhaps there are some things in this community even that we could begin to develop, or some new groups that have been established other places that we could model after. I do hope that you have enjoyed the discussion and found it informative, and that you will respond to it if you wish. And again, we welcome you to come to the Women's Resource and Career Planning Center in 222 Strong Hall. We hope you'll be listening again next week.